This is the Shit You Need to Know podcast. I'm your host, Martha Riley. I'm a TEDx speaker, cheese pizza lover, and master human connector. I help introverts, people with social anxiety, and awkward humans of the world find confidence, connection, and their cool factor. Because have you ever been to a party and someone asked you a question that you didn't know the answer to? Yeah, me too. It fucking sucks. But that's where I come in. I'm asking the questions so you'll have the answers. So sit back, relax, because there's shit we need to know. Hello and welcome to the Shit You Need to Know podcast. If you hear some birds in this recording track, I apologize. They're just out in full force tonight and my sound blocking only goes so far. So I hope you're having a great week. Of course you are. You're listening to the show. That's all I need to say about that. So let's hop into a question. But first, I actually wanted to discuss last week's results. I asked, you know, Kit or Rob. Oh, God. His name is not Rob, it's Richard. So, Game of Thrones lives within me always. So I asked Kit or Richard. And I thought for sure y'all would have picked Richard. Like, who is the hotter of the two is sort of what I was going for. Maybe you are basing it on acting skills. I don't know. But Richard is so damn cute. And I'm sad that y'all picked Kit. You did me dirty. But this week's question is a rather simple one. I like those questions, and I think you guys too. It is, do you call it pop or soda? I just want to see the spread on that. I want to see, like, the demographics of my listeners and people who follow me on Instagram. You can find the poll on Wednesdays at Real Martha Riley, and we can go from there. We'll see. I call it pop because I'm from Minnesota, and I know I have a Minnesotan accent. But yeah, that's it's not soda and it's not Coke. So we'll see. On this week's episode of the podcast, I have Jessica Guzik, and she is the host of the Art of Speaking Up podcast. And this is a super cool podcast. And the reason I wanted to have Jessica on my show is that her podcast is all about empowering, you know, professional women to achieve their career goals by helping them find their voices and really, like, coming into themselves, like, find that inner power. Her show is, you know, motivating and entertaining, because the working world can be really boring. Like, I'm just gonna say it. You probably listen to podcasts at your job all day long. That doesn't mean you don't like your job, I guess, but your mind is definitely not 100% focused on your job. Except if you're my dad, and I was talking to him today because I'm recording this on Father's Day, and he was like, I was like, oh, I can't listen to podcasts at work. Like, my brain can't focus. And he's like, well, I can do two things at once. No, you can't, Dad. Sorry. So with Jessica's interview, we talk a lot about, you know, career and professional life as a millennial. So how can we, you know, be present in our job? How can we be fully there in the moment to enjoy our job? What do we need to know about getting a raise or asking for a raise? And really the best quote I pulled out from this is, allow yourself to make infinite mistakes. I love this for so many reasons, because I know that as millennials and other people listening to this podcast, we can put so much pressure on ourselves to do everything. I was just, like, talking with my boyfriend about this, and I was like, I just feel, you know, tired all the time. I don't think this podcast is good enough. Like, my downloads, I wish were higher. And he's like, why do you do that? Like, you're doing so great. And I was like, yeah, but it's not up to my standards. And I realized that my standards are so artificial. I have no idea what my standards are because I've never sat down and wrote, like, okay, I want this many downloads per episode. I want to make this much by the end of the year. I've never done any of that. So I'm just self-imposing standards onto myself. And I do that at my job too. I'm like, oh, I'm not a good employee. But who says I'm not a good employee? I don't have concrete data that shows whether or not I'm a good employee. This is all career related because you want to be doing good work. You want to be making a difference in your life and in the workforce. And if you're not, I think this interview is for you. It's for everyone, really, but especially for you. So, Jessica, take it away.
Okay, so my name is Jessica, and I work in the tech vertical. I do corporate strategy, which means I solve a lot of fun and interesting and complex problems for businesses. I love what I do. On the side, when I'm not working my day job, I host a podcast for working women to help them speak up and get noticed and feel empowered at work. So that's me in a nutshell.
That's awesome. And what inspired you to get in this line of work? Did you start in corporate strategy right away when you started working and then the podcast came later? Or did you always know that this was something you were going to do?
I took a very winding, very non-traditional path. And hopefully, if there's anyone who feels lost or confused about what they want to do, hopefully my story can help them. But I launched into my career without a clear vision of what I wanted to do. And it actually caused me to find myself feeling very confused and a little bit kind of lost about what what I was here on this planet to do. So I went to law school thinking that I wanted to be a lawyer because I was a really good writer. And as a kid, I really liked to argue. And not even halfway through law school, I started realizing that this wasn't the type of work for me and that I needed far more creativity and kind of far more room to play in my current job. When you're a lawyer, you are operating under the law. It can feel very constrained and not limited, but there's a certain set of things you can and can't do. And I wanted more freedom in the way that I would solve problems in my job. So that led me into corporate strategy. So I finished my law degree, but I never ended up practicing. Instead, I jumped and went in to do strategy work, which was terrifying. And I had a lot of guilt about getting this graduate degree and it being, quote unquote, a mistake. But I'm so glad I did it because the work that I'm doing now is so, like, it's such a better fit for my skills and what makes me happy. And the podcast kind of came out of nowhere. I started it a few months ago just because I wanted more of a creative outlet and more of a way to express myself and also hopefully have some impact out in the world with professional women because there's still a pretty big gender gap out there. And I wanted to, you know, in my lifetime here, be a part of closing the gender gap.
That's a mission I can get behind. Hell yeah. Okay, I don't know if this is just you or like lately I've been hearing that a lot of people who went to law school totally regretted it. Do you feel like that's a mindset that people have, like don't go to law school? I'm sure it depends on, you know, the individual person, but I've heard that a lot.
Okay, it's such a loaded question. And I think it's very difficult for me to give an objective answer because I think I felt so different from all of my classmates. I've always been really creative and playful and whimsical. And I just felt like I couldn't fully express myself and be myself in the legal world. And it just felt way too linear for me. And I know a lot of other people don't enjoy practicing law. I think some people like the work itself, like that way of problem solving, and are maybe more okay in the environment. And then some people maybe like the legal work, but they struggle with how rigorous it can feel. So there's so many things about it, I think, that can make it difficult. But for me, it was a mismatch across the board.
Hey, that's fair. I feel like a lot of people maybe go into those, you know, lawyer, doctor degrees because maybe their parents want them to, or they think it would make a lot of money or something because it may not be a good fit, but it looks good on paper. So in that sense, do you recommend trying to figure out what you want to do before you sort of start your career? Because you said that, you know, it took you a while to figure out. Should you sort of figure that out and then jump, or jump and then figure it out later?
I think you just have to allow yourself to make infinite mistakes because I think the idea of solving this puzzle of what is it that I want to spend my life doing, it's so daunting. I feel like it can cause so much pressure. And for me, I know it can cause paralysis. So I would never tell anyone to have everything figured out before they jump or before they make any kind of decision because sometimes you figure out what you want by understanding what it is you don't want. I was just talking with some friends of mine about this the other day, and we were marveling at the fact that like there are all these career paths out there, hundreds and thousands of things that we could do. And we were like, is there a book somewhere or like an encyclopedia or something out there that tells you all your options so that you can pick? And that doesn't really exist, right? So it's kind of, we just go through this process of trying something and then seeing if we like it. And, you know, if we don't, then moving on. And so I don't think it's possible to have it all figured out, but I think one thing that I would advise to people, which it took me a very long time to start doing, is to pay attention to what you like and don't like and to really tune in. Because I think sometimes we have a story about ourselves of what we might enjoy. Like, oh, I like to, I like to argue and I like words, therefore I want to be a lawyer. But I think a lot of times our enjoyment and our career path, it's much more about just seeing how our body reacts and seeing what makes us feel excited and what sparks joy versus, you know, just theorizing about what we think we should do. So I think really paying attention and getting to know ourselves more deeply can help a lot. And people make career changes at so many different points. I happen to make mine right away, right after law school, but there are people who make career changes much later in life when they're older. And so I think it's important to take the pressure off and understand that it's okay to go down a quote unquote wrong path. I think there's a reason for it and it will lead you to where you need to be. So I don't regret my decision to go to law school. I think it was an expensive decision, but the truth is I wouldn't have ended up here if I hadn't done it. So I think it's important to just be open and allow yourself to not be totally certain.
For sure. And I love that phrase, allow yourself to make infinite mistakes, because I often feel that we're really hard on ourselves if we don't get things right the first time or the second time or even the third time. So I think that's really important to remember. But now is the point in the show where I switch things up and I'm going to ask you some fun questions not related to what you do at all. So I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. What is the most awkward moment you've ever experienced in your life?
Oh my gosh, I'm an extremely awkward person. So I probably have an infinite well of things to choose from, but I will share one that happened a few months ago. And I hope it sounds as awkward as it felt for me, because it felt extremely awkward. It happened at work. I was in a meeting on a video conference and I thought that my video was turned off. And I video conference a lot. It is not like I don't know how to use this technology. So I can tell when I'm on video versus when I'm not. So I was pretty sure that I was not on their video, but I could see my reflection of myself from my side. So I could like see my face. And I noticed in the middle of the meeting that I had a gray hair sprouting at the top of my head. And it started really bothering me and I couldn't concentrate on the meeting. And I was only looking at the gray hair and I couldn't control the urge to try to pluck it, but I couldn't really see it. So I like put my head towards my computer camera so that I could see the gray hair and like pull it out. And so like I just started like hacking at it. And then someone on my team was like, Jessica, you're on like the big screen. And I had no idea that they could see me. I was incredibly embarrassed and I got very red and silent and my whole body kind of felt really hot. But I tried to laugh it off and forget about it. But clearly I haven't forgotten about it.
I was just on a call. Luckily, we don't really use video call in my company, but we use Skype a lot. And I was on a video call and I forgot to mute myself and I was eating and I was like, oh no. And then someone messaged me. They're like, can you put yourself on mute? I was like, oh God. Like,
yeah,
no.
Real.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Next question. What is your favorite frozen pizza?
Oh my goodness. My favorite frozen pizza. Well, I really like any kind of pizza with vegetable toppings. I really like any sort of pizza with pesto on it, which I know sounds weird, but that can be really good. And it has to be thin with a very crispy crust.
Very specific. I love it. Mine is Totino's party pizza, which I've gotten a lot of flack for saying, but I, you know, stand up for what you believe in.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. I've never had that. That sounds really fun. Party pizza.
Yeah, they're the makers of the pizza roll, right? So you would think that it's going to be good, and it is, but everyone's like, no, you're wrong. I was like, well, never, it doesn't matter.
Oh, that's so funny.
last question, and this one's kind of a toughie, but what does human connection mean to you? And how do you find that in your life?
Oh, that's such a good question. What a beautiful question. I think for me, it just means like total unconditional presence. I feel most deeply connected when I'm with, you know, a friend or a loved one, and I'm experiencing so much joy in the moment with them that I completely lose, not like lose sense of where we are, but I just stop thinking about anything that I'm worried about. I stop feeling anxious. I'm just fully there in the moment. And for me, a lot of that, my personal way of connecting, a lot of it happens over humor and laughter. That's like a huge way that I connect with people. But that would be my definition.
That's great. That's a really great answer. And I think that leads me nicely into the next thing. And you mentioned the total unconditional presence. How do you have that at work? Because I know that you can get really distracted sometimes if you're not loving what you're doing. How can you bring that presence into a professional environment?
Okay, so for me, there are two things, there are two big ones that I've identified that keep me not present. And the first is just being unhappy and not appreciating what my job is. And I think it is very, very easy for all of us to feel a sense of like, I don't like my job. This is so time consuming. It's so stressful. I have to commute every day. It's a lot of stuff. And those feelings are valid. It's normal. We're human. It's hard. But I also really, really try to remember that, like, no matter how tough of a day anyone might have, or no matter how much I might feel like I don't want to be in this job anymore, every 2 weeks when I sign into my bank account, there is money in my bank account, and I pay my rent and I buy food. And regardless of how much you're earning or what your specific financial situation is, when you show up for your job every day, that money comes into your bank account. And that can't be said for everyone. And so I really try to focus on that, because there are people in the world that would kill for that. And that would be their dream, is just to have that stability. And they would look at the job and say, that doesn't seem so bad at all. And so I don't want to dismiss, you know, the feelings of frustration, but that really helps me understand that a lot of things that are quote unquote hard can sometimes be relative. And it makes me see how lucky I am to be, you know, yes, I'm in this cubicle or whatever, but like, I'm comfortable and I'm safe. And, you know, that really keeps me present. And then I think for me, the second thing that would make me not present that I'm mindful of is just kind of feelings at work of, you know, fear of not doing your job good enough, or just being afraid of how things are going to turn out, or being stressed about a project, or being worried that, you know, you're not quote unquote doing good. And I think that's common for so many people. It's also very common for women. I think imposter syndrome is a big thing for us. And I really try to become aware of when I'm getting stuck in my own head, and try to step back and remind myself that even, you know, if I have insecurities or if I feel afraid, maybe I'm not good enough, that's okay. I don't have to be perfect at everything. I don't have to be the smartest person. I don't have to be the best person, but can I try? Can I give it my best effort? Can I give it my best shot? And that kind of helps me get out of this space of paralysis of like, oh my gosh, like this is so hard, and more into a space of like, okay, you know, let's try this. Can I make this fun? Can I explore this? So those are my two big ones, and I hope that helps.
For sure. That definitely does. I'm certainly not grateful for my job at times. So that's a good reminder to myself. Like, oh, okay, I have money. That's more than a lot of people can say.
Yeah. It's easier said than done.
So along with, you know, that mindset of you don't have to be the best at everything, what's advice to someone who maybe is starting a new job or just graduated college and is starting their first job? How can you start off working on the right foot? How do you make good impressions? And how do you like be yourself, but also remain professional?
That is such a good question. Okay. And the thing that I will say about first impressions, this is not totally logical, but this is what I have observed in my career. They have a disproportional impact on how people view you. So like, if there is any time ever where you want to like really bring your best and like be on it, it's the very beginning, because we form our views of people pretty quickly. I think as soon as we are in a new situation, or we have a new person on the team, we're trying to figure out like size them up and understand what kind of person they are. So when you're new, that is your moment. That is really your time. And For me, I would advise two things. One is just obviously you want to be doing good work and you want to be excited about your work and you want to bring a positive and proactive energy to everything you do. And, you know, one way to do good work is to try to be proactive and always be thinking when you're working on something, is there a way that I can make this better? Is there anything I could do to make this even better? And that can really push you a little bit to maybe get ahead on the next thing before asking your manager, or maybe you could come up with a creative new idea. Those little things will get noticed and really help you stand out. And then the other piece on the flip side is your interpersonal connections, which you alluded to, are so, so important. So I think it took me a while to figure this out, but I do think there comes a point in a lot of our careers where we have this realization of just how important relationships and your network and who you know actually is as you advance professionally. And so it's really important to get to know people. And you mentioned, like, how do you do that while also being yourself? I think that can be very difficult. It can be really difficult when you're the youngest and you're kind of just wanting to blend in and not stand out so much. What I would say in terms of connecting and ensuring people feel like they know you is you don't have to be crazy and like super flamboyant at the office, but let the people around you get to know you in little steps and pieces. So it could be like the tiniest little thing of, you know, if you ask someone how their weekend was and then they ask you how your weekend was, you know, just say like, oh, I tried this new restaurant, XYZ. I really liked it. Have you been there? Just share a little bit, start getting to know people, because as you have those little small talk conversations, you start bonding with people, you start figuring out things you have in common, and they see you more as a human. And that helps so much. It's not just the good work. The good work is really important, but those connections are everything.
And what's a good way to connect with your boss? Because I feel like you could ask him or her how did the weekend go, but there's like a little bit more professionalism that's needed. So what's a good way to really, I guess, connect with your boss or to make sure that, you know, at least you have a mutual respect?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that one thing that is a great, great way to build a professional connection is to have a conversation about something that is professionally driven, but is not directly the work that you're working on. So it could be something like if you have a chance to just chat with your boss and catch up, it could be asking them like, what are some of their favorite things that they've been working on? Or, you know, did they expect to land in the role that they landed when they first started? You can ask them about their experience, their career journey, something that is very professional, but also very personal to them. And people love talking about themselves. They love talking about what they like and what they don't like. And so that's a really good way to open up a conversation.
What are some good ways to start getting into networking at work? How can we use these conversation skills that we learn with our coworkers and our boss? How can we bring that to other people in the company or other people we may want to meet in our profession?
Yes. Okay. So I'm an introvert. So I am not someone who is prone to like really going out there and asking a ton of different people if they'll like grab coffee with me. And I had to spend some time figuring out how I do this. And for me, it has really come down to openness, which is just being open to connecting. So if I'm walking down the hallway, I'm not going to avoid eye contact with someone. If I'm like in the kitchen area pouring a tea or a coffee and there's someone I know, I'm going to say hello and ask them how they're doing. And through that openness, through making eye contact, through saying hello in the elevator, through asking someone how their morning is going or whatever it might be, that will naturally open things up. And then for me, I follow the people I'm feeling more connected to. So it feels very forced for me to just randomly reach out to someone and say, do you want to have coffee? But it feels more natural for me to just make sure that throughout my day, I'm saying hello, I'm being friendly, I'm being open. And as you do that, then you sort of start to see like, oh, that person seems really cool. I actually want to get a coffee with them. And then it's genuine. And so it's really following what you want, the people that are interesting to you, and keeping it very organic. That's how I like to do it.
Do you have any other tips for being an introvert at work? Because I'm starting to realize that I'm like a socialized introvert. I love talking to people, but I still need to like go home and take a nap if I've been like socializing for too long. So do you have any tips for maybe if you're in a customer facing role or you really have to talk to people all day when it just feels like too much? What are your tips around that?
Yes, I relate to that a lot. And I think the first is to familiarize yourself with your body's cues, because I know for me that when I'm kind of feeling maxed out on interaction, I start feeling very restless. I kind of start feeling like this inner like twitch of like, must stop. And so I try to pay attention to that. And if you're in a situation where you can get up and like get outside and go for a quick 10-minute walk, that can be really, really helpful. If you have like a little thing you can escape to, like a Kindle book on your phone, and just like read 2 pages and then jump back in, just to have like a little mental break, or even just like take 30 seconds and breathe deeply and get back into it, I think that can help. But then also, it's so important to be smart and wise about how you recharge then when the workday is over and you're back at home. And it took me a long time to understand that like I'm allowed to rest and I don't have to always be doing something, and it's okay to just enjoy things. And you know, we don't talk about this a lot, but part of being an adult is figuring out like, what do I actually enjoy? Like, what is an activity that I do and I feel refreshed and I feel ready for Monday again once the weekend is over? So really like paying attention to that and treating that as, you know, equally important as your job.
That's a good concept, the concept of needing to be refreshed in your job and in your personal life. So what are your top tips for maybe achieving that work-life balance, especially if you're new in your career and you want to work a lot because that's what you think everyone else does? So how can you set the habits to start those right?
Yeah, so this is where the culture of where you work is really, really important, because there are going to be all kinds of different expectations in terms of how long you're at the office. Some work environments are very driven by a culture of working many, many hours. And there are other work environments that are very driven by a culture of just doing good work. Now, I've learned throughout my career that I prefer the second type. I'd rather be somewhere that values the work. That might mean there are some days where we work long hours, but there isn't a culture of having to be there until a certain time. So I think the first thing would be to identify what type of environment you feel best in, you operate best in. Now, if you are in an environment where you have to stay or you feel like you have to work long hours, or that can happen in any environment, I think it's really important to just not resist. I remember when I was working very long hours in a job that I had, I would like have these thoughts of like, oh, like, maybe today will be the day that like we won't work super late, even though I knew we were going to. And then I would get all crabby when the evening came and we were still working. And I think I would have been better off if I just had been like, you know what, I'm just not going to have a lot of time this week. And I'm not going to like try to, you know, escape from that reality. It's frustrating, but okay, I've got my weekend. What can I do then? Like, what time do I know belongs to me? What time do I know that I own? And if you're working really long hours during the week, oftentimes that time is the morning. And so I think figuring out if you can bring some joy into your day before work or maybe in the evening, that can help a lot. And then again, when it comes to the weekend, pay attention to what makes you feel good. And this can be so hard for us, I think, to say no to things that we don't want to do. But it's really important. Otherwise, we get to this point of exhaustion.
Yeah, you can't have that, especially if you're 25 and you have to work for 40 more years. So definitely something that you need to pay attention to.
Yeah, oh gosh, 40 years sounds so daunting, but it's
I
not.
Know. Well, talk to me in 40 years.
It gets better. My 30s have been a lot better than my 20s. So okay. Hopefully that's encouraging.
Okay, that is encouraging. Okay, good.
You're like, oh, thank God.
That's a weight off my shoulder. What is the best way to advocate for yourself at work? Because I know, say you want a raise or someone doesn't take your idea seriously. What's a good way to speak up for yourself to make sure that you're heard and respected?
Okay. So there are a lot of different things you can do, but first of all, when we talked about building those relationships and connecting with the people around you, connecting with your manager, that helps you. Part of the reason you're doing that is because when you get to those moments where you're asking for a raise or it's time to speak up, because that person sees you as a human being and you have more of a bond with them that goes beyond just like the report that you created, that helps them want to listen to you and really want to be on your side and root for you. So that's something I would say. In terms of asking for raises, there are a lot of steps involved, and I'm happy to share as much or as little as would be helpful, but that is one where it's really important to be prepared. So to know what you're asking for and why you're asking, and that requires you to do a little bit of research outside your company to understand what your market value is. And it also requires you to have a scary conversation probably with your manager. So you might have to pump yourself up a little bit. You might have to maybe find a friend who can hold you accountable and make sure that you do the scary thing, because that can be a very scary conversation. And then when it comes to speaking up in general, so my show is called The Art of Speaking Up. And the whole reason that I called it that is because my career really started to improve and take off when I started becoming more vocal at work. And I realized it's just so hard for people to know what we're thinking and know the true full potential of what we can contribute if we're not sharing what we're thinking. And I spent a lot of time stuck in my head worrying that my idea was dumb, that I didn't know what was going on. And so I was very, very quiet, and I would only speak if I was so certain of what I was saying or I felt like I had to. And I just kind of had this realization that I was living in a very fear-based place and that I was missing out on being a part of the conversation and really just like not enjoying my career. And I had to become comfortable with the idea that sometimes when we speak up at work and we share things and we say things, it's not always perfect and we don't always know how it's going to be received. And that's part of it. I think the professional world is more gray area. It's messier than being in school and being a student. There isn't always one right answer. And you have to be a little more comfortable with that in that world. And it's worth it. It's worth it to push yourself to speak up, because that's how you get noticed at work. And that's really how people see how you think, and how you think is such a huge asset to your job. And the more you speak up, the more people will see that. So I really encourage people to push themselves, contribute in meetings, be a part of the conversation, even when it feels uncomfortable, even when you're not totally sure, if you're afraid your question is stupid, just ask it. There's someone else who's thinking the same thing you're thinking, I guarantee.
I have a question about motivation levels at work. So say maybe you liked your job in the beginning, but it's waning, you're not feeling it anymore. Is that something you could bring up to your boss? Or is it something that, you know, maybe you should hold off and then eventually it'll get better? Because I want to know, like, what's the line for speaking up about things?
That's interesting. I think before you make any kind of decision around that, I think it's always best to figure out what is the ideal outcome that you want to get. And so if the ideal outcome that you want to get is you want different work, well, you're not going to get different work most likely unless you say something. Now, you don't have to say, I'm bored, I hate this, I'm not motivated. You could say something like, I'm really curious about this other type of work. Is there any way that I could maybe help out with that other project? So you can be strategic, but the first thing in order to be strategic, the first thing you really need to do is figure out what it is you want, what would make you motivated. And that might mean, you know, it could mean you're not in the ideal position, but it could just mean that you need maybe a little bit of tweaking or retooling of what you're doing. But I would say figure out what it is you want, and then you don't need to share that you're unmotivated, but share what you need to share to get what you want. So ask for the thing that would make your role feel more fulfilling.
What do you think are some of the things that could make work more fulfilling if it's not currently? I know that's probably like a really subjective thing, but what are some things that you've noticed in your work history that people really feel motivated by?
Oh man, it's so different for everyone. But I know for me personally, I'm very motivated by the people around me. I really like having positive relationships with my coworkers. I really like feeling like a part of a team. And it took me a very long time to understand that that sometimes makes me even happier than the work itself, is the feeling of team building and camaraderie. And so what that means for me is that I put effort into getting to know my teammates and my colleagues. I put effort into supporting them. I put effort into asking them to support me, because I get so much satisfaction from that. For me, the satisfaction that I get from a human relationship is so far ahead of the satisfaction that I can get from a project. But that being said, I think that enjoying the work that you do is really, really important. And I will say that if you're earlier in your career, in my opinion, the work tends to get more interesting as you progress. And sometimes you don't always get the most interesting or the best work when you're just starting out, because that's kind of the nature of the corporate structure that's out there. But I think it can be helpful to find little things that you like and try to focus on those. And it can be the smallest, tiniest, silliest thing, you know, like if making your morning to-do list and crossing it off brings you joy, then make sure you're doing that every day. If there's someone that you, you know, have seen in your workplace that does a job that looks really interesting to you, ask them about it and try to learn about it. And so there are so many different things you can do. And I think it comes back to knowing what makes you happy and what makes you feel very motivated. And that's a journey. I'm still figuring it out. And I think paying attention and really understanding that about yourself, it won't just make you feel happier once you begin to figure it out. It'll actually make you better at your job because you'll be more engaged.
And I think those are really lifelong lessons to learn, because you said you're in your 30s and I'm in my 20s. So what do I really have to look forward to when I'm in my 30s in terms of work? And how can I set myself up now to have an awesome career, you know, tomorrow, the next year, or, you know, 10 years into the future?
Oh my gosh. Yes. And it will get so much better. I promise. It really does. 20s are hard for so many reasons. There are so many things about it that make it incredibly, incredibly difficult. But also, through all of that stuff, that is what makes you who you're going to be later. So all of like the stuff that I do on my show and all of the advice that I give to people in the working world, I'm only able to give the advice because I was in pain and suffering in my job. Things were not going the way I thought, and I was unhappy and I was stressed and I was self-conscious. And because I went through that, I can help people with it, and I can have a lot of appreciation for things now. So I know that kind of probably sounds a little annoying, and it's like, oh, but like, this just sucks and you're telling me that's a good thing. But it really is all part of life. And for me, I believe it's just things wax and wane. There's like up waves and down waves. And so if you're in a down wave, that's okay. It's fine. It happens to all of us. But there's an up wave coming. So just keep that in mind. I guess the only thing that I would want to encourage anyone listening is to set a crazy, big, ridiculous dream for your career. Just pick something. It doesn't have to be something you feel qualified for. The point of a dream is that it's a dream. Just pick a crazy, ridiculous thing that looks really incredibly fun to you, and keep that in your mind, because I think that sometimes when we're earlier in our careers, or maybe we're just struggling to feel confident professionally, we just don't give ourselves enough credit for what we're able to contribute. And no one is a genius. No one is like the perfect person. And people who have done incredible things in their careers, they're just regular people who had a dream and believed in it. And so I really like to encourage anyone to do the same thing. That's what I do on my podcast. It's a very female-centric podcast, but a big part of it is encouraging women to aim for something high, to want to ask for, you know, more money, grow their salary, grow their careers, and just be comfortable with moving upwards and moving forwards, which can be a big challenge, I know.
What did you say that you could share more about? Like,
I will explain how I would think about this. So the way that it works is that every position out there in a company has a dollar value, and it's usually a range that the company is willing to pay for that role. And so whatever your title is, there is a minimum and a maximum amount that you would be earning in that title. So when you're asking for more money, essentially what you're trying to do is move to the higher end of that range, which means if you want to go in to make that ask and you want to feel really confident about that ask, you want to understand what the upper limit of that dollar range is. And so the golden question is, well, how do I figure out that number, right? And that's where you have to get a little bit creative and you have to kind of go into detective mode and think about how you might be able to get some data points from jobs that are similar to yours to understand if there's any wiggle room upwards. I think scouring the internet can be really helpful. This is one that I have done also. This one is very scary, but it has worked for me, asking people their salary. So as a female, I'm aware of the fact that there is a wage gap and that even in an equivalent position in many, many companies, women are being paid less. And that wage gap is even larger if you're a woman of color. So this is a pretty important thing. And so for me, in my career, I have actually went and asked men that I feel comfortable asking in a similar role what they're earning to understand if I was on par with them. So that is something you can do. It's not illegal. It feels scary. It feels taboo. The employers don't want us doing this because then they want to pay us less so they make more money, but that's something that you can do. But you want to do as much investigation as you can to try to understand what that upper limit of that range is. And then what you want to do is sit down and brainstorm all of the things that you've accomplished in your role. So all of the things that you do, all the ways that you add value to your company. And then after you've brainstormed that, you want to brainstorm again and think of all the ways that you are uniquely adding value. So not just the duties that you do, not just the tasks and the activities, but you as a person, what are your strengths and superpowers that you're bringing into the role that you do? And you want to take all of that stuff that you brainstormed and all of that data, hopefully, that you found on what your market rate might be for your role, what that upper dollar limit might be. And then you want to come up with a really concise story. So your story might look something like this. It might sound something like this. Hey, manager, as you know, my salary is X dollars. And based on things that I've seen and some investigation, I know that this role typically pays up to X amount, which is higher than what I'm earning. I feel like I have done a really good job with my duties that are X, Y, and Z. And not only that, but I've also have really tried to leverage some of my strengths by doing A, B, and C. I wanted to ask you and see if you feel like I'm at the level of maybe that higher number, or if not, what I might be able to do to close that gap and put it on them to, you know, give you the answer and investigate. And if they give you a yes, that's great. And if you don't get a yes, you've got some really valuable information on what you need to do to get a yes. And the biggest thing here with all of this is doing the scary thing. It's not that hard to make the list. It's not that hard to do the research. The hard part is it's terrifying to schedule a meeting with your higher up. It can be very scary to take control of the situation and to generate this conversation and to say these things. So the biggest thing in all of this, especially when it comes to salary stuff, is just not letting the fear stop you from doing it. And if you find ways to do it that feel very honest and authentic, that can really help. It's not like you're going in and being like, give me $1 million. It's not a ransom conversation. It can feel like that, but it's not. But just find a way that feels natural, that feels easy. And don't be too hard on yourself because it's a scary thing to do. It's tough.
How do you find that confidence to do something scary like that and ask for a raise? Because for me, when I think about that, I'm like, nope, not today. Not going to do that because I just get so stressed out about it. So what are your tips for feeling the most confident you can in the workplace?
Totally. You know, I think that confidence is like this really sometimes misunderstood thing. And I think a lot of times we think that we get to do something like asking for a raise when we feel confident. And you can feel very, very scared of something and you can still decide to do it. So it's actually not about feeling good before you do it. And if you make feeling good a prerequisite to doing anything scary, you're never going to do the scary thing, because if it's a scary thing, it's a scary thing, right? You're never going to feel good. So you're going to have to be uncomfortable. You never will feel comfortable. That's the truth. But the good news is, a really good way to get you through the discomfort is to try to really deeply connect with why you want this thing, because that can motivate you to want to do the uncomfortable thing. So if you're asking for more money, think about, well, what are you going to spend that money on? Like, list it out. How is that going to make your life better? Write out that amount that you want. Write out what you could do with that amount. And that's going to help motivate you to want to do it. And to give you a little even more motivation, the salary that you earn today is going to affect every other salary and job that you get in the future. Because usually when you go out an interview for jobs, the salary that you're able to negotiate is often closely tied to the current salary that you're making. So if you get, let's say, like a small $5,000-$10,000 bump right now, that bump, if you put that in a spreadsheet and calculate what that's going to add up to throughout your career, as every job and the next job and the next job and the next job gives you another salary based on your previous salary, that's going to compound to a whole lot of money. And so that's one more thing that can motivate you. But just know that it's okay to not feel comfortable. You can still ask for something. You can handle the discomfort. It's not about feeling like a king or a queen when you're doing it, but it's about knowing why you're doing it and telling yourself, I deserve this, and I deserve this enough that I'm not going to let this fear or this discomfort stop me from doing this thing.
That's great. I don't know if I'm at the point where I mean, we kind of get raises every year. So that's like it's a new concept for me. I've actually never had to ask for a raise before. So we'll see. I'll have to listen to this when I need to.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it stays scary. It's never not scary for me, at least, but that's okay. I mean, that's okay. And I think it's important for employees to be empowered. You know, employers have so much power in these situations.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Shit You Need to Know podcast. Next week, we will be back for another episode, as we are every week. But in the meantime, if you miss me, on Fridays, there is a new segment. It's called 15 Minute Fridays. The episodes are no longer than 15 minutes. And it's just me spouting off some shit and some stories that you might find interesting and relevant to your daily life. I think they're fun, they're pretty unfiltered, and not really edited at all. So I hope you enjoy that. I'll either see you Friday or next Wednesday. Have a great week.
Thanks for listening to the Shit You Need to Know podcast. I've set up a phone number in case you have a question you need answering or just want to talk. Feel free to give me a ring at 301-941-7448. That's 301-941-SHIT. Also, don't give me a ring. No one does that. You can text the number, too. I don't know why I said ring. If you enjoyed this episode of the Shit You Need to Know podcast, feel free to subscribe on iTunes and rate it 5 stars.